Hello, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. The chain, wait, the sprocket over which the chain of simpler living turns. I should just write this down and make it a thing.
The chain of the thing with the stuff.
Yeah, I like this idea, but it's not crystallized yet. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internet. And today, how sausage is made.
That's right. Penopaloozas and things. And we are joined by... Now, shit, this is really embarrassing because I've already forgotten.
Joshua Megan? And Melissa.
Melissa. Okay. Joshua and Melissa Blunt, thank you for joining us.
Howdy.
You Hi. Two just moved to Portland, and you are carefree and carless.
Yeah, we're 12 weeks deep.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
And loving it.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So we've got you guys to come in and talk a little bit about that experience, and that will we will unravel the sweater from there.
I have to clear things up because I did not know what Cascadia was.
Oh, really?
Oh. Can you guys just enlighten your listeners, please?
Aaron likes to call it Carscadia. It's just not the case.
It's just my like poor grasp on the English language. The happens. Only language I know, by the way, but... why don't you define it as somebody who's like a native to Cascadia?
Sure.
And, so I know I'll get it wrong.
Yeah, I grew up right outside of Tacoma, Washington. So I've lived in the Evergreen State for most of my life and then moved to the proud Beaver State of Oregon, which I have been in for how long now? I moved here in 2007. Lived in Vancouver, Washington for about 5 years before that, more or less. So I've been most of my life spent my time in the Great Northwest. And apparently this bioregion, which kind of terminates at the Cascade Mountains, after which it becomes kind of a desert and blends into Nevada right. and Utah and everything else out there, there's this beautiful, pristine emerald of an ecosystem sitting up here on the upper left-hand corner of the United States of America. And I believe there has been a secessionist movement since I don't know when. I'm not sure when it started, but there's a long-standing tradition of people saying, hey, this whole bioregion is a great asset, and it could very easily stand on its own. In fact, we would be better off without the rest of the country
Let's do that.
Dragging us down. So there's been a secession movement for a long time wow. of people saying, hey, let's just make our own little country.
There is a Cascadia flag, too.
There is, yeah. It has a tree on it.
This is unbelievable. So I mentioned this to Melissa after listening to one of the podcasts, and she was like, well, yeah, it's Cascadia. That's where we live now. It's like, oh, I thought it was a thing
Cascade
they made up.
Cascade Mountain Ranges. I mean, yeah. Come on.
Yeah, but as far as I understand, the secession movement has never been successful. One of the major roadblocks that I remember hearing about is...
The Civil War?
Shit. This is where I
that was problematic.
Trying to speak like really authoritatively about something that I have like a very loose grasp on. But as I understand, there was some major conflict. I believe maybe the Vietnam War, Pearl Harbor. One of these big events. Are you going to Wikipedia this now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
There's some research going on.
Yes.
Right. I forgot to mention that my wife is also a librarian. So.
Well, there we go. Yeah. So the library sciences, you're already far better off than I am. And I refuse to Google things while I'm talking about them. So it's, you'll soon be in a very good position to help us understand kind of the nature of all this. So as I understand, basically, there was some big political upheaval, some big war-related thing that completely overshadowed a secessionist group's
Let's
attempt.
All gather together against this common enemy from afar
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Which is something that I believe has happened several times in American history. Like someone wants to do something interesting, and then something else happens that kind of overshadows it.
Right, so. Like take over the Iraqi pipeline or something.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. So the basic idea being that Cascadia is kind of the way that people who think of this as its own special place refer to it. So I don't know if that clears things up or not.
It clears it right up for me.
Yeah, yeah. more to the point, I know that Hopworks makes the Cascadian Dark Ale, Ooh. Which is, as I understand, a beer style that it was originated here in this region. and the first new kind of beer to be developed in some time. So
delicious.
They do a good job. Yeah. Are you familiar with Hopworks?
I am.
You been there?
Well, we drove by today, but no, I haven't been yet.
Okay.
There's so many places that I've yet to arrive at.
That's
because
okay.
Because I no longer have a car.
Uh-huh.
And also we live on the other side of the river.
Okay. Oh. Right.
The Iron Curtain.
The Willamette Curtain?
Yes.
Yeah, in some ways, yeah. Maybe also that, well, it's not the Transit Curtain because Transit goes downtown. I was going to say something clever, but it's gone. So you guys, how many months in?
3.
Okay, yeah. So you have plenty of time to explore. Yeah. You get a pass for like the next 6 months.
Nice.
If someone
nice.
Says, you tried this beer, you say no. And you can say it proudly because like, hey, I haven't had time yet.
And I'll add it to the list.
There you go.
Be However, prepared. You're done with Saturday Market. Don't ever go there anymore.
No more Saturday Market.
No,
is that
no
the rule?
Saturday Market for you guys anymore.
Okay, so
where are we supposed to get Pine State Biscuits exactly?
At Pine State Biscuits.
We have to go to Pine State Biscuits, I think, now.
Isn't it over here though?
I think that's the rule.
Yeah. Nope, no, that's the rule.
Saturday Market for real is the place that you go if you're from out of town or if you just moved here. And that's the last time I went, I think, was like the first year that I moved into town.
It was like my second or third weekend.
And it's cool.
Like we went we went every weekend for those 3 weeks, but then after that I was like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm done with
I'm not gonna talk down Saturday Market because Market is great, but there are only so many times you need to go and buy like a hemp basket or something made, you know, embroidered into something else. Like it's a craft fair in a lot of ways. And one of the big draws of Saturday Market back in the day was that you could go and get street food.
Right.
So like an elephant ear or a burrito.
Yeah. The whole cart pod sort of movement kind of sort of overshadowed that.
Yeah.
So for us, Saturday Market was like a grocery store.
Oh,
but recently
they're talking
we found
about the craft market down at the riverfront.
Oh, we're talking about totally
of
different
the
things.
PSU farmers market.
That's right.
Which is where I kept
we have,
okay,
have we even okay. been to this?
No, we haven't.
We haven't
have
even
no
been
interest.
To this craft market.
Well, then.
In that case, I take it all back. The PSU farmers market is fantastic.
Yeah.
I was like, I guess I don't understand anything.
And I was
Brock
thinking,
says, don't go there.
Why haven't I seen the hemp baskets yet?
Yeah, you would have had 3 by now.
Right.
Let's mark it down. Lesson number 1, I'm an idiot. Don't listen to anything I say. We'll continue from there. No, that's actually, I think it's probably a common mistake for some. And I think when I hear a market, I just immediately think of the place where everyone goes. There is a great one-man band that hangs out down by the Max Stop.
That is true.
Right by the Burnside
yeah.
Bridge. That guy's been there for years, and he's got like an accordion and a drum set with a snare that he plays with his feet. And a bunch of other stuff, and a bag of instruments that he lets other people play. So it's pretty
impressive.
Great. Yeah. Everything else at Saturday Market is not so much exciting. Portland's Farmers Market, great vegetables. So
I feel much better now.
Yeah, now that we've cleared that up. What are we drinking tonight? Let's give the rundown. We've got, you said, Joshua, famously, and I quote, you don't drink anything that's not an IPA.
You know what? And I totally like...
Unquote.
Misspoke because I don't really drink IPAs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I said the opposite of what I was thinking.
Oh.
I think I was half asleep when I wrote the email.
Oh,
this
okay.
is delicious, though. I've got the Elysian, the Immortal.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're okay with it?
It's serious.
Because I was prepared to trade you. I have.
No, it's delicious.
These are Seattle beers. I have the Pike Stout from Pike Brewing up in Seattle, right down from the obligatory first Starbucks, which once you've been is not all that exciting. It's cool. It's historic, but you don't have to go there just to be there. The coffee's the same. Pike Brewing
Bad.
Is great. Pike Brewing is amazing. I was up in Seattle with a friend, Trent. He and I, for lunch one day, just split a pitcher of Pike Stout. So I figured, why not? And there are 5 X's on this label, which I don't know what that means. It must be really good.
I don't think I even have 1 X.
I'll lend you one of mine.
I've got the Spire Mountain Draft Cider, pear flavored, and it's from Olympia, Washington, but delicious.
Yeah, they do a good thing. That's Fish Brewing, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fish Brewing Company.
Fish Brewing, which I visited 2 summers ago on a beer tour with my friends. And Fish Brewing is one of the only places to get really cool quality beer in Olympia. So at least beer that's made there. So it works out okay for you?
Yes.
Excellent.
Quite good.
You're happy.
Yes.
And Aaron?
I am rocking.
Obligatory
nice.
On seal.
Oh.
There's no stopping that.
Folks, this is radio, but there's beer all over him. I don't know.
Cola, actually. But
I heard that stuff eats batteries.
Yeah, well, it just might. Good thing I didn't get any on the electronics here. So. Bottled under the authority of Pig Iron Barbecue in Seattle, Washington.
Perfect.
apologies to whoever's hanky this is. This is Pig Iron Cola.
Nice. Well, that, after that, it's got to be good, right?
And yeah, actually, it's kind of flat. Surprise.
really surprising, but, considering how quickly the soda came out of the bottle.
Right.
So all the carbonation just popped like right before you had a chance to consume any of it.
You know, there's a reason for this. This has been in my pannier all day.
Oh, yeah.
Going through the country bike ride on these like unpaved roads throughout all of Southeast for a good 3 hours.
So. Seriously.
Is that what you guys just got back from?
So this has been a big weekend for everyone who loves bikes in Portland. And I suppose this would be a good time to segue into Pedalpalooza stories.
Sure.
Pedalpalooza, which of course here in Portland is the biggest bicycle event in the year. It goes from, last Thursday was the kickoff ride, which neither of us were at, unfortunately. But great organization, great ton of rides. Everything is pretty much volunteer-led. I think there's a couple rides that are led by businesses, but most of them are just people who love bikes, who love doing things on bikes, that say, hey, let's get a group of people together to go out on bikes and do a thing.
Nice.
So we were all, and Aaron has just stepped out to clean himself up. There's a lot of cola everywhere.
It's a bad situation.
Yeah. This doesn't happen every day. I'll start with mine. I didn't get to join any official Pedalpalooza rides until yesterday. The kickoff ride was Thursday. I was hoping to go to the bicycle touring happy hour, but they changed the time. I think they bumped it back a day so as not to interfere with the kickoff ride. So the time I was planning to go and talk about bicycle touring, no one was there. I didn't go. It was okay. I found out the night before. Just saw pictures on Facebook, and it looked like, I guess that already happened. So. That happened. I've been moving. I've been moving from this place to the new apartment that I've just acquired. And we are now 90% moved, I think. Just
you were
about.
Kind of a Pedalpalooza ride of two or one.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, well, you did one with me on Friday morning, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was before your work and after mine. And we carried my bed on the super trailer, the 8x4 flatbed trailer.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
That was intense, yeah. The main drawback of this trailer is that it has no wheel wells. And so if you put something onto it and, you know, it's big, it may touch the wheels. So we put some crates down first, then put the box spring and mattress on top of that. And it worked out okay. We tied it down. No shifting of the load. Everything rode pretty well. We got that taken care of. So I've done, 3 or 4 big super trailer loads. I think 3. Since Thursday, and that's been
right in the heart of Pedalpalooza.
Yeah. So I've been doing that instead of having bike fun. It's bike work, which is not so bad. I mean, I'm glad to make it happen. And I turned down stiffly many offers for help. Everyone I know has been saying like, "Oh, I've got a truck. You can let me know." You know, and it's really nice of them. But I also I have this both a stubbornness of saying I really want to try and do this by bike as much as possible, and. And it just kind of a stubbornness in general. Just like, no, it's my way.
General stubbornness.
Don't help me. Yeah.
There's bike stubbornness and just general stubbornness.
Yeah. The one exception being my in-laws were in town last Monday and Tuesday, and they had a rental car. We did a car trip up to Seattle to see relatives, shirt tail relatives for me. It was a lot of sitting around and just kind of nodding and smiling for like hours on end. It was great. But when they were here in town, they had the car rented. And so they just said, hey, we have the car. Let's put some stuff in there. And I was really close to being like, no, I have principles. But you can't say that to your in-laws. Like, there's no way. And they're not going to understand.
Right.
I would just be an asshole. So I'm not
exactly.
going to do that. So they moved I think maybe 1.5 to 2 loads. But after that, it's all been by bike. So
nice.
Yeah. And let's see, Pedalpalooza officially, after got the load moved on Saturday, the first ride that I did was the World Naked Bike Ride.
Okay.
So that happened on Saturday night. What else did I do?
8-bit.
8-bit. Oh, that's right. We did the 8-bit with Zed.
What's the 8-bit?
The 8-bit ride, it was a celebration of 8-bit games and culture.
Nice.
So a couple of different folks showed up with sound systems. They had classic video game soundtracks. And there was a dance-off downtown by the, which fountain is that? The Skidmore Fountain? Salmon Street Fountain.
How do you dance to chiptunes?
Any way you want, really.
I was going to say, very well. But
yeah, it was a good time. It was a good ride.
It was really fun.
Bad dancing.
Yeah.
No, there was actually some good dancing, I thought. I mean, there was some really creative kids that were beyond.
Kids who weren't even part of the ride. Because we're at this fountain on a really hot day.
Yeah.
And the waterfront's always crowded on the weekends anyways. Sure. So we've got the sound system going, and of course people are going to gather around like wondering what's going on. And then we announce that there's this dance-off. And so there's just people who are just bystanders. We're like, I'll dance.
Totally.
We had a woman with her kid, her infant in the ergo.
Like an ergo, yeah, like, with the baby facing out.
Yeah.
She was like making the baby move its arms and
I
stuff.
I kind of felt bad for the baby a little bit.
Only a little
he
bit, though.
He didn't look like he enjoyed it very
It was
much.
Pretty entertaining.
I think the lesson we can learn from that is that, you know, when you're headed to the waterfront, bring a sound system, announce a dance-off, enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it was like for the pre-ride, like, a month and a half ago?
Yeah, yeah.
We went out there and just had a bunch of sound systems, and a lot of the people that were dancing were not people with bikes. They were just people that happened to be there. So it was pretty fun.
I would say most of the people that were dancing were not the people on the ride.
Right, right. And my favorite costume from the 8-bit ride was the Tetris couple.
Trio.
Were there three of them?
Yeah, there was an L,
there was an L,
T, and a block.
I didn't see the L. Okay.
Yeah, the L, I don't know if she bowed out or was just too embarrassed to dance with the T and the block.
That makes sense. Okay, yeah. So that was fun. That was a good time. I met listener Max out there. And Max, if you hear this, hello. He says he's listening to the episodes non-sequentially. So
all right.
There's like one in
That's
85
the best way.
Chance that he's going to hear this. But hi, Max. How's
it going? Is that just random? Or
I think he's going with the guest he's most interested in first,
nice.
Which I would not blame anyone for. We have a guest-heavy show. It's the big draw is the people. You, sir, and you,
I'm going to be a huge draw.
You are the big draws on this show.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyways, Max, he recognized my voice. And this has been happening a couple different times. Like, since Pedalpalooza started, you and I, Aaron, have both been on organized rides, and people are like, oh, I recognize your voice.
Right. Well, this is kind of a first for me.
Yeah?
You know, this is my first Pedalpalooza where I've been a co-host.
Yeah, right, right. So you're not used to being famous.
So, no, no.
How's it going?
Not bad. I'm getting free drinks all over the place.
Nice, nice.
No, not really.
Keep the coach coming.
That's right.
I was thinking you're used to being in bands that are followed by like five people, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's the only way to be to keep maintain your artistic integrity, and make sure you're not too famous. But it was kind of cool because Max actually just said hi, Brock, and I was like, have I met him before? Do I recognize him? I'm like searching my mental database. Do I know
Doing
who this
check,
person
yeah.
is? No, I don't. Hi, good to meet you. But yeah, it was fun. We had a good talk about a lot of stuff. He had a whole list of guests that I need to get in touch with.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
great.
In the future, hey, great to see you.
Exactly.
Because it is great to see them.
Exactly.
I have a terrible memory, so I'm frequently like, oh, person? Yeah, that is my name.
Uh-huh.
And you are a person.
Ahoy. Howdy do. Yeah, the World Naked Bike Ride, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You
how
did
many,
not go.
What was, no.
No, you're a Never Nude.
I'm a Never Nude.
You went on the Never Nude
I
ride.
Went on the Never Nude ride. Yeah.
How was that?
Was there a Where? Never Nude ride in parallel?
No, not in parallel.
I like the idea that like one block over.
It was actually before, and I think some of the Never Nudes did decide that they went on to the World Naked.
They upgraded,
yeah,
or side graded.
They're like, you know, hey, this riding in my underwear isn't so bad. I bet I could take the next step.
Yeah. Well, that was how many of them were like classic Arrested Development Never Nudes? Were there like lots of jeans?
I would
shorts?
Say like all but two of us.
Okay.
And I was one of the two.
You were wearing your classic underpants and suspenders combo.
Underpants and yeah. suspenders combo. Yes.
Right, right.
It's a good move. It's a good move.
Totally. Well, it makes the underpants look tighter.
It's what's making me famous these days. I've been recognized for the suspenders and underpants.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Not a common look.
Then you're not the guy with clothes on. You're the guy with underpants and suspenders.
Right,
on,
right.
So.
Right. Right, right.
Listener Sarah, new listener Sarah.
Oh, yeah.
Was on the Never Nude ride, and towards the end of the ride, like both of us could recognize each other, but I'm at least I can't speak for her experience, but I'm at least socially awkward enough to not like go like, okay, I know you, but I don't know you from wherever. Plus, you don't want to be that guy either.
Like, hey,
especially when you're all in your
check
underwear.
Out my suspenders,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But she finally like broke the ice and was like, your name's Aaron. I recognize you for the suspenders and underwear combination.
That's fantastic. I love it. Yeah. So the World Naked Bike Ride is It's a huge event. There's a lot of people there. I don't think it's 10,000 people, but there's a lot of folks. The official count, I am not aware of, but okay. I think the numbers have always been inflated. Like the past couple of years, everyone's like, there's 10,000 people, and it's more like 6,000 or 7,000. So if you're a stickler for accuracy, there it is. But the trick with the World Naked Bike Ride is that basically everyone converges on this one spot. The past couple of years, it's been on the east side, really easy to access.
Yeah.
This year, straight downtown, right on the park blocks. I did not get to go. Apparently, the Portland Art Museum was hosting a display.
Encyclopedia in the Nude.
Right, right. So it's a book that I got for Christmas this last year, actually. Michael Erbacher, I want to say is his name. I could be very wrong, but something like that. He put out this book called Encyclopedia that has a bunch of photographs of classic bikes that are rare and or notable for their design. And I think a lot of those bikes are on display at the Portland Art Museum. So the idea was if you go into the museum, you pay $1 for each article of clothing you're wearing. So I wanted to go and check it out, but we ended up getting out late. It was kind of we did another moving load between rides. So the trick is with the Portland Naked Bike Ride, you will be standing in line for a long time. We got downtown around 10 o'clock, I think, and we waited until 10:45 before we were appreciably moving.
Wow.
The rest of that time, we were walking past parked cars that were kind of stuck in the gridlock. And,
oh, gosh.
Yeah, there was a bunch of people kind of standing on the sidewalk saying, hey, those folks don't have any clothes on. So it was, it's an interesting experience.
Is the World Naked Bike Ride always on the same day as the Grand Floral Parade, or was that just
I think that was coincidence.
Yeah.
I think that's
serendipity.
Because there was a number of rides that were actually disrupted by that. My first ride on Pedalpalooza was the Deutsche Radfahrt, which is German for German bike ride, which I should have figured because the description is all in German. I still decided to go on this.
Kind of assuming it would be an English-speaking ride.
Right, or like a German theme maybe, or pointing out certain German historical markers around Portland, which they did, but it was also all spoken in German. Everybody on the ride like was speaking German to each other.
Is there a significant German expatriate like population in Portland?
Apparently so. There's two organizations. Zeitgeist Northwest were actually the organization that put it on, and there's also a German American I can't remember the actual name, club or whatever here in Portland. Who actually had a building just off of Division and 82nd.
Interesting.
Here.
I like Zeitgeist as a name. I think that's great.
I think those are the younger crowds.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. The existential problem people.
Right.
Yeah. That's great.
Right. So it was kind of awkward, but still fun. And a few people I was the only one that admitted anyways that I couldn't speak German. And there was at least one other guy who later on warmed up to me and was like, I can't speak it either.
I don't know anything at all.
My girlfriend's fluent. She's been translating for me.
Nice.
That's
fantastic.
You just
need a translator.
Right.
Seriously.
Right. And when I admitted right at the very beginning, I don't speak German, a couple people were kind enough to say at least the gist of what he was saying. Of course, we went by Henry Weinhardt's brewery, and he spoke on the history of that. I think mentioned something about Henry's wife, just because I know he used a woman's name a couple times.
Okay, well, there we go.
it was fun. Zeitgeist Northwest. The ride after that was the 8-bit ride with Zed. That was great.
Yeah.
And then I went on the Never Nude ride.
There we go. Yeah.
Non-parallel.
Right. Non-parallel.
Naked bike ride. Yeah.
Obtuse.
It was actually earlier. And apparently there was some confusion in the schedule. They were published, the Mercury or the Willamette published the Never Nude ride and the Sunny Day Naked Ride, the Midday Naked Ride, starting at the same points at the same time, even though they both had rescheduled.
Right.
After the publication date.
Okay.
and so, yeah, there was, I guess, this awkward period where people who were sort of part of the Never Nude Ride came and met up and were like, wait a minute, everybody here is actually naked.
People have to kind of sort themselves out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, one interesting thing that happened with me on the Naked Ride is because it's such a popular event, because there are so many people, there's a lot of inexperienced riders that will get out. And this is not a knock on inexperienced riders. I would say anyone should go out and ride their bike. Ride it naked. Do it anytime you want. But the thing that happens is that it's like a funnel, a bottleneck, if you will, where people are kind of forced into a small space and everything slows down. I was riding my tall bike in the Naked Ride. And so I have this point of decision every time the traffic flow changes, at which I either need to say, oh, I can balance for a while, or I need to get off before I fall and hurt somebody or me. I misjudge that.
Which is difficult when you don't have clothes on.
Yes. It's even harder.
Yeah. Right. If you fall, like,
you don't want to fall on somebody without any pants on.
Right. Also, my ass sticks to the vinyl bike seat because it's a vintage Schwinn thing.
Yes.
So basically, I said I can make it, and I couldn't, and I felt myself starting to fall. So I fell right in front of a dude, and I landed on my right leg. It worked out okay. All right. I got a little dent on my left, and no one was hurt, but it was a very close call. So that was kind of exciting. After that, things kind of mellowed out. Yeah. This morning that we did some rides. You did the ride in the city?
Country ride in the city
with Sean Granton.
With Sean Granton of the Urban Adventure League, who I totally like went fanboy on.
Kind of freaked
him
out.
Yeah, totally freaked him out. I was like, Sean, hey, I don't know if you remember me. I'm Aaron from The Sprocket.
I have all your albums.
You were my first interview. I went to shake his hand, and he like totally like wasn't sure. He totally limp-wristed me. He was like, okay.
Dead fish handshake.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Later on, he warmed up to me. You know.
But this was a ride basically doing country-style riding in the city, unpaved and such?
Yeah, unpaved roads. We never left the southeast.
Impressive.
Yeah, they're all around here, just in our backyard. It was really fun.
Nice.
Met a lot of people, got recognized by at the very beginning before we even started, like some guy was like, I recognize your voice. I was like, you listen to The Sprocket? It was cool.
Did you have Vince more clothes on than just the underwear and suspenders?
I did. Yeah, I was recognized like by my merits and not by my attire.
Good for you. Your mother would be proud.
Yeah. New listener Vince recognized me. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Trying to think what else.
You said that, the ride was stopped short because Sean's bike fell apart.
Yeah, that just occurred to me. Yeah, so at the very beginning of the ride, his crank was coming loose. And there's a ton of people like with tools, of course, because they're all like these Rivendell, you know.
Prepared for anything sort of guys.
Prepared for anything dudes. And some guy had at least vice grips that we could tighten it with, and it got okay. And then a friendly neighbor person where we were parked offered a socket wrench, and you know, he got it tightened there. Ride went on for at least another hour, and then it was just rendered loose again, and he was able to tighten it and lasted maybe another 5-10 minutes.
Okay.
And then
it was the end of ride.
It was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or as they say in Tron, end of line.
End of line. So, yeah. Game over.
There we go.
But we happened to be in Montevilla where...
Oregon Bike Shop.
Oregon Bike Shop, thank you, was. actually, the discussion was between... We were sort of halfway between or equidistant between Oregon Bike Shop and Performance Bike.
Oh, right. Like, and do you go independent?
Sean, depending on how desperate you are, there is a Performance Bike just over here.
Performance Bike is the corporate option.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he said, well, that would be desperate. And someone else recalled that Oregon Bike Shop was nearby. And so, of course, we went with that option.
Yeah.
Which I bought new pads for my brakes.
There you go. Yet to be installed, right?
They will need it after that ride.
There you go.
There was a lot of cool like spots where the road just dropped. you come to a T, and so, you know, a lot of us were thinking like, okay, so do we turn right or left? And Sean just kept going straight
down
and
down the hill.
Yep. Down this little trail. There was a lot of times where we were single file, like you couldn't fit more than just one bike on the trail. He had planned for more of this, but there was at least one time where we all had to dismount and walk our bike down steps.
Nice. It's like a cyclocross race in reverse.
Yeah, sort of. A slow cyclocross race.
There we go.
So to speak. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Speaking of slow bike races.
Slow bikes, yeah.
I was at the Tom Labonte, what was it called? It was the Lab to Lab cargo bike ride. This is organized by Travis Whitworth's son, Kale, who just got the cargo bike for his birthday, the cargo flyer, modeled after the radio flyer wagons that we all had when we were kids. And again, Travis gave his kid this this cargo bike as his 13th birthday present with a U-lock saying the city is yours. And this was basically kind of a cargo bike hot rod show. So anyone who had a Tom's cargo bike, who built my tall bike and a bunch of others, built the cargo flyer. I saw the number one also today. It was a dog hauler machine, which is pretty great.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, all those bikes showed up. We got spoke cards to put in our wheels. We got little tags to fill in the details about our bikes. And we all took a ride from one Lucky Lab brewery to another. Because you can't spell Labonte, as in Todd Labonte, the cargo bike builder, without lab. So, yeah, it was a fun afternoon. And I also went to the Blessing of the Bikes, which was at the Episcopal Church downtown, Davis and 17th.
So sad I missed that. Yeah. I hope they have another one some Sunday.
Got holy water thrown on my tall bike, which was great. So that was a lot of fun.
What do? They just bring them in a parade and bless all of them?
Or? There was like a little service. There was a liturgy and whatnot. We stood there, did the thing, responsive reading and whatnot. And then there was
Rice Krispie treats.
Rice Krispie treats. I don't know if it was actual communion, but it was. They were snacks at least. So, yeah, I think I treated it as such. But, yeah, it was a cool thing. So, anyways, Pedalpalooza, we've been talking about it for like half an hour now. So, good times. It's big news for Portland people. So that's what's happening. Now that we've got all that out of the way, Joshua.
Let's get to the real shit.
You folks just moved to town. You moved here without a car. Did you have a car before you moved here?
Yes. We sold our car the day before we left.
Okay. And what informed your decision not to have one here?
We had been here on a few trips and gone carless, mostly carless, on all of those and enjoyed the experience. And we both had explored other cities without a car and enjoyed that and the experience of good transit, which they don't have in Florida, unfortunately.
There is the occasional bus.
Okay, the occasional bus, like every 2 hours or so.
Very occasionally.
Yeah.
So I always seemed to see them when I was driving and I would get stuck behind them, but
they only appear when you don't want them.
Right.
Only when you're already in a vehicle and trying to get somewhere.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we moved from suburban Florida.
Okay.
To, I mean, now come and visit us. We're near 17th and Davis.
There we go.
In the heart of Portland, because it's over on the other side of the river.
Right.
I guess. I don't know.
No, it's okay. Actually, Multnomah Village claims to be the heart of Portland. But it's far on the west side, so I don't know.
How can they claim that?
But then again, MLK Boulevard is said to be the soul of Portland, so I think there's a weird like anatomy thing that Portland hasn't figured out yet. It's still in the amoebic stage.
I see.
But yeah, you guys, which part of it was this Panhandle Florida or is this?
This is Central Florida, so just north of Orlando.
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
We lived in a small suburb called Mount Dora.
Uh-huh.
And we already had pared down to one car, so we had a 05 Corolla.
Okay.
That I bought, I guess, in 04. I don't know, whenever
it
came out, because I had to buy a car. And I'm a big car guy, you know, rolling in a Corolla, stock.
Right.
How we do. And part of the thing was, so we had two cars, and then I gave, my little brother needed a car, and I make websites and stuff and sit at my house most of the time. So I was like, oh, I have a car. You can have this car.
There we go.
Because it's older. It was a
91 Acura, which he's really a car guy, actually, for real. And so he loved that car and tricked it out and did all kinds of great stuff to it.
Nice.
Yeah. So we were already down to one car living in a suburb of Orlando. So like you can't get anywhere. Like it took me a 40-minute drive to get to a theater to see a movie.
Wow.
And not like an independent, interesting movie, like to see
like
Fast
to the
and Cineplex. Six.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Iron Man 3.
Right. And so this was over time problematic for us. And we had a plan to move to Portland for about 8 years, 7 years.
We had been working on it for quite a while.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Basically, you know, we got married and we're like, oh, we could live anywhere. Where could we live? And then we made lists of cities and I like the city. She likes nature and grass and whatever. And so we landed on Portland and then kind of just got stuck is unfair. we have love, family and friends and lots of love for the area, you know, that we lived in Central Florida, but it didn't necessarily call to us as home.
Sure.
Right. So I turned 30 last year and freaked out a little bit.
Happy birthday.
Not a lot, not overwhelming freakout. Enough of a freakout to move my tiny family across the country with 6 suitcases and certainly no car.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Very good.
I flew my ass to Hawaii on my 30th birthday.
Well,
ended up staying there for 2 years.
Nice.
That works out well.
It could be worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Melissa said, we sold the car. It was the day before we flew away. So we just...
Nice.
Yeah, our flight left the next morning at like 8 or 9.
Oh, wow.
A lot of things to line up, but like, you know, sell the car, rent another car because we had to get to the airport. I went to a basketball game that night, like the local team with some friends, and then we flew away.
And that was it. And here you are.
And now you're living the dream.
Here we are, 12 weeks in.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious just about impressions because this is obviously different than Florida. So what strikes you as Portland as a city? Like what do you notice as people who have just arrived?
Is there as many old people?
You know what? That's not something I had thought about, but no. And it's really welcome change for me.
But old people are good.
Yeah, they're
okay. But also younger
people
and
I love some
median age people.
Some of them.
We like variety. Portland has a lot of variety. In some ways.
Somewhat.
Fair enough. This makes for good radio. Melissa made this awful face when I said there's lots of variety in Portland because there's lots of white people in Portland.
Yeah. There's a lot of different kinds of white people.
Yeah, there's much racial diversity in Florida for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, I think Oregon and Portland have it's a long history of like subtle weird racial dynamics, which I don't fully understand. I've only been here, I guess, 13 years now, and I still don't really have a handle on it.
Well, only 13 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as opposed to like the rest of my life that I grew up in a suburb of Tacoma.
Yeah, but compared to like most of Portland, that's quite
a long time.
That's
right?
Like several generations.
I suppose so, yeah.
I think you're a Portlander now.
Okay, yeah.
I think you get your card at the 11th year.
Okay, sounds good. I'll get it stamped and laminated.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting thing. Just because like the Northwest is so predominantly white, there are so many people here that you know are of Caucasian descent, and it's just the racial dynamics that exist in most of the rest of the U.S. Not that they don't affect life here, but it's just it's a different sort of existence. I think it's easier to say, what, me? I'm not racist. And when, in fact, I may have very entrenched patterns that I just am not aware of.
Right.
So
a lot of it is just really subtle and, like you were saying, like unaware until like it's right there in your face.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd be curious to kind of like dig up some more of that.
Yeah, the Oregonian did a really good series on race and housing sometime last year, and it really, I think, brought to light, unfortunately, I don't think anything has ever actually been done about this, but brought to light sort of the subtle and not so subtle racial segregation inherent in the housing system.
Yeah.
Basically, if you are part of any kind of low-income public housing, which, of course, is going to be predominantly people of color, you're going to be moved out to Gresham, you know?
Yeah, and that's kind of the trend.
Yeah.
Is that Rockwood and Gresham are kind of like, it's the lower income areas that people are kind of forced into.
And Portland, by design, has like moved all of their public housing out there.
Right. Yeah, which is very interesting. So, yeah, worth some consideration.
Yeah. Chris Smith of the, help me out here.
He's from Portland Transport and Portland Comprehensive Plan.
Thank you. Yeah. In the Comprehensive Plan, it's sort of trying to help undo some of that. But, I mean, we're talking pretty much since the founding, the policy was like push all the people of color out.
Yeah.
You know, it was North Portland for a while and then North Portland got trendy. So now it's Gresham. Now it's Rockwood.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. A good 100 years of kind of systematic mobilization of people that
segregation
don't necessarily want to be moved. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
right,
curious.
Totally. So the variety of which we speak is largely it's largely Caucasian people, but there's some variety in age group and
within that there is a lot of variety really. I mean you all see all kinds of different people.
Yeah, one of our things that we have said to people is that we wanted to stop being the weirdest people in the room.
Oh, sure.
and we have been successful.
This is a good place to move for that. Definitely.
Occasionally, we are the weirdest people in the room, but not every time.
I would say, growing up in Michigan, I was definitely almost always the weirdest person in the room. And over here, like, I have to work at being the weirdest person in the room. And
I'm going to have to, like, we were talking about tattoo shops on the way over here.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, well, we need to throw some more effort in. We need a median weirdness. We need to participate in the weirdness.
Yeah. And you need to kind of fall in line. Just kind of
we don't want to be on the far ends.
Right, right. So what I assume, like, you guys kind of have some simpler living things. Like, you're certainly trying to live without a car. What else do you have as far as food systems, other aspects of life that you may be shifting and changing at this kind of juncture in your lives?
In Florida, mostly due to the fact that we had a car, I would do grocery shopping about once a week and do a pretty big trip for whatever we needed that week. And we had a pantry that was, like, always not really full, but almost full of, you know, just staples. And it was easy to just have. I mean, if there was a food drive, I could easily grab, like, you know, 5 or 10 cans that had just been hiding in the back of the pantry. Now I'm shopping about every day, every other day.
Okay.
And carrying whatever I'm buying back to the apartment. We're very fortunate. We live in what I'm starting to call the grocery store district.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, 4 or 5 grocery stores within pretty easy walking distance.
Including Local Choice.
Yes, Local Choice. We love them. They're
so
on.
Local Choice. I'm trying to remember. Where is this?
It's 19th and Everett. I think it's not 19th, 9th. 9th, yeah. Relatively new, near the North Park blocks.
Okay. It's like the PSU Farmers Market, but in a store.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're so really
dope.
Great.
Great deli and
very
awesome.
Helpful, very friendly.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
Nice.
So we try to go there when we can.
There we go.
As long as it's something that is grown locally that we can get.
Yeah, and
Cheerios
you're also,
don't really grow on trees.
You're close to the Whole Foods. You're close to the Trader Joe's. And I'm trying to think of what else
there's
is there.
There's a Fred Meyer.
Fred Meyer. Oh, that's right. That's
there's a Safeway that's kind of close, but mm-hmm. I don't prefer that one.
Right. Yeah.
For reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So you have groceries and walking distance. So you can choose, like, fresh foods every day as opposed to stocking up over the long term.
Right. Yes. Yeah, we haven't even had to look into that. I mean, eventually the cost might be worthwhile to try to save that money on, like, a monthly trip to Costco or something.
Sure.
But so far we can just, you know, walk to the market and get whatever meat or vegetables we're going to have for dinner that day, and we're pretty well set.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, when you start walking and biking around, you realize, like, all of the things you're carrying. And even walking out of stores, you know, now, because I'm either on my bicycle or walking, if you know, I have a big messenger bag, right? So if they're like, well, do you want another bag or do you want to just put this in your bag? And, well, no, I'll just shove this in here, I think, as long as it'll fit. You become very aware of what you're carrying around.
Yeah.
So how many cartons of eggs have you crushed?
None yet.
Zero.
That I know of.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. A couple squashed loaves of bread, but that can be remedied. And bread doesn't need to be non-flat.
Yeah. Bread can be it can be, like, stretched out.
Still delicious.
Re-squished, unsquished.
Reshaped. Yeah. Nice.
So we're biking and walking and buying, going to the, I guess, grocery store more frequently. We have a kid.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A small kid.
How old is the kid?
2.5.
Okay. Is this a male kid?
A
or
a,
okay,
yeah. Feel free to call him or he.
Or a female kid, yes.
Is it Connor?
Okay, nice.
C-O-N-O-R.
There we go.
Because Gaelic is the best way to go.
Nice. Not in this room right now. He's hanging out with a responsible caretaker at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Because we're drinking and carrying on, he has a person with him.
That's right.
Maintaining his safety.
Which really is the best situation when that's the case. So, yeah.
when podcasting, find a babysitter.
Right. What do you notice about just about mobility? Because that seems to be kind of one of the biggest issues with children in cities. Like, a lot of people, in fact, will say, I need a car because I have children.
Because, yeah.
That has been one of my biggest headaches. Uh-huh. We invested in a pretty nice umbrella stroller, so it folds up pretty small and light. And I use that not every day, but if I'm going more than a few blocks, he has been really resistant to walking places.
Interesting.
And actually has just recently started requesting that we go get in the car.
Uh-huh.
which is because we got a Zipcar to go out to the coast a couple weekends ago. And since then, when we go walking somewhere, he's like, are we going to go get in the car? I'm like, no, we don't have a car.
You
I'm
have
sorry
to break the news.
That.
Yeah. Like, no, we don't have one.
But it's also been cool to see him growing in that respect as far as being able to walk further distances, which we're talking, you know, three blocks, maybe, yeah. on a good day.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, it's a long three blocks for someone of that age.
Yeah, so, he has pretty short legs.
Tiny legs, yeah.
And now he starts to remember how to get places that he goes frequently or likes to go.
Park.
Yeah, he can tell us how to get to the park that's closest to our house. And that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part, too, of moving is feeling isolated, like the suburban isolation. Uh-huh. Lots of people talked about this.
Yeah.
It's not new information.
Yeah.
And wanting to participate in a city more and wanting to interact with human beings and like whatever that means, like just be around people and hang out. And wanting that for my son too, to, you know, like we said, there's not a huge amount of racial variety in Portland, but there's lots of different people. You know, there's the, you know, loud people and quiet people and friendly people and mean people and whatever. And so participating with those people is important. So just walking down the street is a big deal. And, so I think Melissa, most of the time, if she's going a distance, right, you bring the stroller. If we're together, which is, you know, weekends or whatever, when I'm not working, I'll frequently like just throw them on my shoulders or, you know, we can make it work most of the time. I have very masculine arms
there
that
we
I can
go.
Carry them with.
Yeah, yeah.
Upwards of five blocks.
Perfect. Well, that five blocks is a long ways too.
So one thing that I've noticed a lot moving to the city and walking, biking, et cetera, everywhere is that I'm always sweaty. And I feel bad for the people around me because I don't know how bad I smell.
Right.
But there's a bonus to that in that most people are also sweaty,
uh-huh.
depending on the weather and how many garments they have on.
Right. People in Portland seem to have embraced their smells.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Good, bad, and
otherwise. You could always pass it off as like, you know, hey, I smell what?
Maybe it's that other guy. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of like farting on an airplane and hoping that no one traces it to you. No, it's really like I think the only city maybe that is less conscious of its smell than Portland is perhaps Eugene. But but Portland is, yeah, it's a good place if you just want to live outside and make smells as your body does, is want to do. Like this is a thing that happens to people, and like we should just accept that and get used to it. So yeah, I think that's okay.
I feel better about it now. I'm growing to get used to it, but I kind of, so moving from Florida, the Sunshine State, and then moving to Portland, where I've heard that it rains a lot.
Right.
But we've had like this like amazing, fantastic, euphoric weather most of the time.
Yeah, well, and the run since you've been here has been amazing. It's been beautiful.
Maybe we brought the good weather. I don't know. Occasionally.
Thank you.
in the quiet of our own apartment, when no Portlanders are around, we complain and say, oh, where's the rain? Oh, we are so sad.
Oh, just you wait.
So
don't you dare. Don't you dare.
Don't worry. We don't say it in public. And I assume this, we're just recording for fun, that this won't be published. So nobody will ever find that out.
Please don't tell the rest of Portland that we feel that way.
Yeah. So I went to see a band play at Mississippi Studios, and afterward went to the Iron Man 3, like, opening that same night.
Okay.
And so I'm riding home, and at first I was hot, but then it starts raining a little bit. It cools me off. You know, and I don't know, maybe it's 25 minutes to my apartment. I'm very happy and all kind of a little soggy, and I go to bed and everything is right with the world.
Did you go to bed soggy?
I did not, because
okay.
I took most of my clothes off.
That's good.
Thank you for asking.
That's good. No, I was concerned.
I do.
Because that
my wife and I share a bed, so
there we go.
I think it would be. I don't think she would be pleased if I went to bed all wet.
Yeah, and that
I could ask her now. One second.
Oh sure,
Melissa. can you chime in on this? I don't know.
As long as you didn't touch the sheets, pillows, or blankets.
Or you.
Or me, it really wouldn't bother me that much.
If you're soggy and then wrapped in Bisqueen, you're okay.
And maybe, I mean, what's your smell status at that point, too, would probably factor in. Like, if there's a wet dog thing going
on,
it's
a good point.
Might wake me up.
Noted. I'm going to do some more research and get back to you, Brian.
Okay, sounds good. Please report with your findings. Have you experimented with any alternative fibers, like the stuff that you might not necessarily be encouraged to buy in greater America?
Are you talking about weed?
No, I was actually asking about wool polyester.
Are you a cop? Because if you're a cop, you have to say
so. You have to say it, right? Because if you're a cop.
Otherwise, it's entrapment.
So have you experimented with wool? I have not. Melissa, preparing to come to Portland, kind of did research and studied up on different garments, specific, you know, raincoats and things like that. I said, I'll bring my clothes, you know, when things don't work, I'll switch them out or get rid of them or buy new things. And I figured getting, for me, it made more sense to just get in the environment and see what happened.
Right.
My wife is a wonderful researcher and is much smarter than I am. So she may have. Have you?
Yeah, I do have some fleeces and various things like that for weather protection. Yeah. And actually, in this case, my preparedness has not helped me at all because the unexpected happened and we've had gorgeous, sunny, warm weather. And I had like no shorts, very few t-shirts. And yeah, I was kind of shit out of luck on that.
Right, right. You kind of caught unawares.
Yeah, so Josh won this round.
Okay.
I'll get him when the next season rolls around.
You've only got a few months of this.
Yeah. I told her, I'm keeping my jorts.
There we go. Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, like, our winter has been, this year has been, like, the driest winter I think we've had in a long time.
It has, yeah. We've had far less rain, I would say. I mean, we had a stretch of pretty wet weeks, maybe, like, interspersed with really sunny weeks.
But, right.
But, yeah, there's been a lot more sun than I recall from spring's past, so, no, yeah.
Yeah, well, springs, and just think of the winter. Joe Doble, past guest, was talking when we met him at Hopworks, you know,
right.
way back then.
It was a wet day then.
It was a wet day, but he was mentioning like, yeah, people have been complaining about the rain today, but this has been, that day was like the first really hard rain we had all winter.
Right.
You know, whenever that was, what was that, February or something?
Something
like
that. Yeah.
You said hard rain. Yes. Is this hard rain for the Pacific Northwest or actual hard rain?
No, just regular hard rain, like the rain that we would normally get every day, from December through like April.
So this is the other thing, talking about moving to friends and family in Florida, they're like, oh, it's going to rain so much. You're going to be sad and depressed and things will be bad. So the rain, so we have only experienced a few days of this, a few weeks, in our short time here, but the rain in the Pacific Northwest, is wonderful because you can still do things. When it rains, when it's like storming in Florida, you can drive. It's not very safe.
No, it comes down. Well, it's not just rain though over there. Like it gets kind of solid sometimes.
Right.
You've seen the newscasters like during hurricane reporting where they're can't stand up. That's anytime we have a thunderstorm in Florida, that's basically the intensity.
Right.
I mean, it gets worse, but
it's like either on or off. There's no in between.
Yeah,
there's
it
no
rains. People
switch.
Don't use umbrellas there because it rains sideways.
Here, if you have a hoodie, like you're fine. Like,
yeah.
It's maybe you're sad
in our very small experience.
Right. Of course, like
wait for it.
Yeah,
I'm.
We'll see.
And I will say,
we
like,
don't want to say we love the city yet because we've only been here a short time. We don't want to say that we can survive the rain because again, short time. Yeah. But for my money, I'll take this rain over that rain any day.
Right.
I will say the summers and the early falls here are just gorgeous, and it totally makes up for the shitty winters and springs.
Totally.
Here.
Yeah.
So you're being spoiled, and I will say, the best time to move to Portland is the summer because you do get spoiled.
Cash in on those good vibes?
Right. You cash. Yeah, exactly. You sort of save that memory up. So then when it does rain, you're like, okay, I remember the sun's going to come out. It's going to happen.
It's true. Yeah, tomorrow. You can look back on that.
Well, shit, I made an Annie reference.
Nice.
Musicals for the win. No, it's when my wife moved to Portland at first, she moved, I think, in November, and it rained like probably Florida-style rain for like the first week she was here.
Wow.
And that is a situation in which like you don't have anything to reference because you don't have the sunny June or the sunny July to say, like, I'm going to wait until this comes back again. That you do have a leg up on this. You have an advantage, I think. So that's good.
Yeah, send your email somewhere else because I'm sure the winter is coming.
Yes.
It'll be here. Seriously. So you guys, did I hear that you have bicycles or?
I do not yet.
Okay.
I'm sort of just getting to the point where I'm thinking it's a good idea and I should maybe even get kind of acclimated before the weather turns around on us.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
By the way, I did catch the Game of Thrones reference.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah,
excuse me.
It was a little late. I was a little late on the uptake there. But
I got it because I'm thinking about the fact that I'm not watching the season finale right now and trying to not look at Twitter or anything until I can see it.
Thank you, Aaron. I am illiterate in those ruins, so thank you.
I haven't seen any of season three.
Right.
So
we'll keep it quiet. We'll keep it quiet.
Oh, my gosh.
Spoilers.
So,
oh, my God. Let me tell you what happened.
I heard it's crazy.
We're trying to put down the patriarchy. So I purchased a bicycle a week or two in. I bought it from some gentleman on Craigslist. It was about the right height.
Uh-huh.
I know nothing about mechanical things or bicycles. I've ridden bicycles before at home.
Sure.
You know,
that's all you need.
So I ride a bicycle and really like it. Like,
uh-huh.
See, you guys ride bikes at kind of a different level. I'm not quite there yet, but the bicycle culture in Portland is really interesting to me. So I work at a shared office. It's, you know, you pay, I don't know what it is, $200 a month or something, and everybody works at desks. And it's funny because, of course, there's no parking, right, because it's Portland. And but
there's
the bicycle
no parking anywhere.
Right. The bicycle parking is, there's like, I don't know, probably 20 people any given day and, you know, 12 bicycles. So I think the kind of culture around Portland and bicycling and just like low car lifestyle, it welcomes you in without being too pushy.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a beautiful late 70s Schwinn Continental.
I love those.
Light blue.
Nice. You nice. Know.
Her name is Marge.
Her name is Marge.
Oh, that's
You've
sweet.
You already named her. Wow.
I think,
yeah.
Melissa, did you name her?
I named her. We had the idea to name our belongings after characters from The Simpsons.
Oh, perfect.
Cool.
You know,
yeah.
As a shout out. So she was blue, and I just figured it had to be a female because, I don't know.
You know, much like you name like
a
ship.
Ships are ladies, so I guess bikes are ladies. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. A male name would just be like, that would be bad luck, more or less. That's how I've heard it for the ship thing. But
Yeah, you don't want bad luck when you're cycling.
Exactly.
That's why I named my bike the Condoleezza Rice.
Well done, sir. Well done.
I think you win the
name. That's not really her name. I'm sorry.
So
some smaller bike runs right into it, broadsides it.
So yeah, bicycles, and it's like a 6-minute ride to my office.
Okay, nice.
So that's what I usually do. I ride the bike in the evenings, got the lights and the helmet and whatnot to maintain safety.
There we go. Lights are a good idea.
Attempt to avoid flip-flops on the bicycle. That's also a safety precaution.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the things that I've thought. So I injured my, re-injured my knee recently. So I've been off my bike for about a week and a half.
Okay.
Because I'm terrified that I will hurt it again.
It's just going to go all the way out next time?
Yeah. I have no idea. I had an ACL replacement 10 years ago. So I just, I baby it when it hurts.
Sure.
Makes sense.
But yeah, so cycling is fun and I like it.
Nice.
And on the way here, Melissa was like, well, what am I going to talk about? It's called the Sprocket Podcast. Are you sure it's not a cycling podcast? I'm like, I don't think so. I listen to it all the time. They talk about bicycles, but not any more than other Portlanders. I don't know.
Right.
Well, that's good, I guess. I mean, I hope everyone's comfortable here. Yeah. Did either of you ride bikes in Florida when you lived there?
As a kid, I haven't owned one as an adult.
Okay.
At all. I actually am the only person that I know of that has ever forgotten how to ride a bike.
Oh, interesting.
We moved pretty shortly after I learned how to ride without training wheels when I was, you know, a kid, like 5 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then it was winter and we had moved from Florida up to Virginia. And so there was snow and I just couldn't ride my bike in those conditions. And maybe it wasn't even like it was packed away somewhere. So then I tried to get it out and ride it in that spring and I just couldn't. I had forgotten whatever I had. So I had to relearn to ride my bike. And so I've always been a little afraid, not very confident of a bike rider since then.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean it's the sort of thing that they say that you never forget how to ride a bike, but obviously in your case, like there are certain muscle things that you have to kind of pick up again. So are you nervous about like if you are to take up bicycling in town now, like is this is it kind of a tricky, is it a roadblock or anything?
I'm planning to do it at some point. And like I said, I'm kind of feeling the itch to get started sooner rather than later. Lately anyway.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'm a little nervous about riding in traffic because that's something. Yeah. I mean, in Florida, there's not really traffic, especially where we were living. So I was riding on like a one-way street with no cars on it you know, when I was a kid.
Right.
So my experience was way different. But I think that I'll manage and people here, drivers are generally accommodating and bicyclists have quite a bit of clout.
They're at least, drivers around here are at least more aware that there's cyclists on the road. I would think our infrastructure can improve a lot as far as being more friendly to the novice cyclists,
yeah, yeah.
especially in downtown. My experience has been you kind of really have to know your shit to bike downtown. or at least like just really be hyper aware.
We're sort of in the Northwest, which is a little bit more residential, and I think that will be a nice place to like get started slowly and kind of dip my toes in there.
You have low traffic streets in your neighborhood.
Yes, very. Yeah.
And there are a couple of bike lanes. I think that is that's a large roadblock for a lot of people that would like to bicycle. It's, as it has been termed, the interested but concerned demographic. Oh, yeah. That's, you know, a certain percentage of people. Is that it?
Okay. I think so.
Yeah, the lower 30%.
There's an actual number.
There is.
Wow.
Yeah. Because what is it? Interested but concerned, confident and fearless, something like that.
Something like that. Like, I can't remember. Our Chris Smith episode. He said it.
Right. Yeah.
In there.
But no, I think that's a thing that happens to a lot of people, and I would be interested in seeing the city make steps in infrastructure, perhaps, or I don't know what else, enforcement, traffic stuff. Just making sure that people are okay being on the road as people.
I think there's a lot of shifts. So where we live in the Northwest, there's a lot of shifts between, you know, bike lanes to no bike lane, but you're allowed to take the lane as a bicyclist. And then there's also like this, so from my perspective, it feels like a cultural thing about whether or not to ride on the sidewalks when you're on that side of the river. So over here, I see lots of people riding the sidewalks. There's fewer bike lanes. And so it seems more, I don't know, acceptable or whatever. But I would be terrified to ride on the sidewalks because there's lots of people on them.
Right.
And I don't. Sure. I think the law says that you should maintain like pedestrian, like the speed of a walking person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so, where it's legal, technically, you're supposed to keep about, you know, the speed of a walking person is what you're permitted to do on a bicycle, which is one of the reasons that I think it's nicer just to ride in the street because you plan on
going
riding
that
faster
slow, you have
that,
to kind of be a relatively accomplished cyclist, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not easy to slow.
It's much more difficult to go slow than it is.
As we mentioned on the naked bike ride.
Right. Only the pros ride on sidewalks. So, yeah.
I think I'm going to make some t-shirts.
Exactly. But no, I think it is nice to have kind of a lower traffic area that, you know, if you're planning, Melissa, to get onto a bike for the first time in however long, and now it's been how long would you say?
I've ridden bikes on vacation.
Okay.
Like there are islands down on the Gulf Coast where it's mostly bicycle transportation. And so we've done that. So it's been a couple of years.
Most. But even with a couple of years off the bike, like you kind of want a relaxed situation to get yourself onto a bike again and practice a little bit. So, yeah.
I also have the barrier of being the primary caregiver for our son.
Right.
So that's, I need to research, you know, a trailer for him and I looked into a few different options. I was thinking I would just wait until he was old enough to get kind of like a ride behind type thing. But now I think I'm going to go ahead and get the trailer and let him relax because he's not really interested in biking yet either.
Do you feel confident? So we're new to the city as well, so spending a lot of times looking at Google Maps on our phone and trying to figure out where we are and turning around a lot and whatever. And so I found mostly the best way to kind of plan a trip ahead of time, if you're going anywhere out of the ordinary, kind of take a look at the streets and stuff. Google Maps has some pretty good cycling directions usually if you're going pretty close by. So I'm wondering, have you thought, like, I guess bicycling, you would go to places you normally go to, grocery store?
Probably.
I don't know where you go.
Places that are close enough to home that if something went awry, I could get back, you know?
I know the places you tell me you go. You go to OMSI and the Children's Museum and stuff like that.
Yeah, and those are I probably wouldn't be ready to bike there for quite a while.
No, you couldn't bike to the Children's
Museum. No, yeah, that's a pretty big hill. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, one step at a time.
A little harder,
Time for beast mode.
yeah. Well, maybe as just a kind of a wrap-up thing, until the bike happens, what is your experience with transit?
Mostly good. I'm not a huge fan of the buses, although I'm probably just biased against, you know, that's all there is in Florida, and so it sort of has a bad, you know, reputation.
Sure.
Yeah, confer the movie Crash.
Yeah. And we've also had, which this has happened with almost every form of transit that we've used, where we don't quite understand the one way is going east or west or north or south and the other. So we've gotten on the bus going the wrong way and gotten stranded and things like that.
But sometimes that's serendipitous.
But I felt that way about the streetcar at first too. And now I've really come to love the streetcar and prefer it over even the Max.
You do have to learn kind of how the system works, which is not always very evident, which I think is probably their blind spot a lot of the time. But yeah.
To their credit.
Yeah. And it's nice. I help people with transit a lot. And even as like a new person in the city, it's kind of cool to be able to like say, oh, yeah, you need to go that way on this one.
And
And that, I find that happening almost every time I get on the Max or the streetcar. But yeah, I take the streetcar multiple times a week, I'd say. Usually if it's like if I have Connor and we're just trying to get somewhere a little faster or get home faster, it's nice. And then we use it to get places on the weekend usually.
So does that go to the places where you would usually go? Like is it practical to use the streetcar or a bus for shopping, or do you find that to be a little bit cumbersome?
Well, where we live, I pretty much can walk. I don't think any of those run to where the grocery stores are.
Okay.
It would be faster to walk.
I see.
Yeah. For where we are. But otherwise, yeah, I would definitely do that. And we do take it when we go to the farmer's market. We have taken the streetcar because that's kind of a far walk.
And a lot of them, so like to attractions or, I don't know, on longer trips, like if we're going to OMSI, if we're going to some fun thing that I cannot think of, you know, usually it's like, oh, transit just dumps off there. Awesome. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find that we go to places that we can get there by transit because that's what we have to work with. So
it's kind of a choose your own adventure in reverse.
Yeah.
I like we're at the end of the line. What's here? All right, we're going to do it.
So I think the first weekend we were here, we were going to go check out a church and Google Maps, right? Found the directions. Okay, streetcar this way. Okay, awesome. Hop on the streetcar. Took the wrong one.
Wrong line.
So there's two lines in Portland, and we took the wrong line. Ended up, I think, at OMSI, right?
Mm-hmm. We saw that we were going across the river and kind of figured out that we had missed our stop or something. And we could have gotten to where we were trying to go if we had known that we were on the wrong line. Anyway, so as we were going across the river, we said, well, I guess we'll just go to OMSI today.
Right. The Oregon Museum of Science.
Yeah, Church of Science.
From anyone who is not familiar. Yeah, it's a great spot.
And TriMet, to their credit, like their website is pretty good. I've had nothing but good experiences with their website.
Totally. It's all
planning,
all on me mostly. I think like I get confused. So by myself, it's easy to isolate myself and say, okay, I'm looking at these directions. I understand this thing and this thing. But when I'm maybe carrying Connor and Melissa and I are talking about some other thing, I am easily distracted. Yeah. And she's depending on me because she's.
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't tell you like on the north side of the street or on the, south side of the street.
Right,
That's one of the things we've noticed because we spent a lot of time, especially so coming here, we were trying to ascertain like what's the fastest way? How can we do this? How can we do that? And the Max line seems to drop off pretty close. But then we had some other meetings and stuff. So we rented a Zipcar. And so I don't know, about 9 times out of 10 when we rent a car or there's also car to go in the city.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, pay by the minute or pay by the hour, depending on what you're doing. Car services for people that do not have cars or otherwise want to rent a car. We've found ourselves, I have gotten lost because I've missed a turn or because I've done something wrong. We were late coming here because I was just like, it's there. Oh, goodbye. You know, exit. And I just have to continue on and wait for the GPS to tell me the right way to go. So we get lost in cars much more frequently than we would in transit or
walking. Almost every time. which I'm not driving.
I wouldn't say that.
I don't want to point fingers, but
I get lost a lot.
Another thing about driving that Josh has found, and like I said, I haven't driven yet here, but it seems like we always think it will save us time because of our previous life and our programming from that.
Sure.
But it usually ends up not working out that way.
Portland's a weird town that way.
Traffic, parking, getting lost. It usually takes us just as long or longer than transit would.
Man, it was disgusting. One time I didn't eat with Melissa and Connor, and so I went. I was like, oh, I need some food. Let me go get some food. Little Big Burger is delicious. Let me get that. That's 4 blocks away. Oh, look, a car to go right here. I could drive the car to go.
Drive these 4 blocks
right
here,
and
really
get much
quickly.
Faster. Yes. Get back to my family. It's going to be fantastic. I'll have a root beer float because I did such a good job at being fast.
That's right.
And so I spent the next 25 minutes looking for parking.
Oh.
And then parked further away from Little Big Burger than my apartment is.
Originally.
Walked back. I think I actually skipped the food because I was just so irritated. And so, yeah.
Fuck Little Big Burger.
I'm just so angry about driving. I don't know.
Yeah. And I must say, like, I really respect Car2Go, but at the same time, you are still driving a car and you still need to find a place to park it, which has been my biggest problems with the service have been finding parking. So, yeah.
How often do you drive?
Do I drive Car2Go or just in general? Well, I have a job driving a school bus, so I drive every day. But driving for my own personal mobility, almost never.
Aaron, do you drive frequently?
Occasionally for my job.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the things I found is that not only is the parking a problem, but I mean, I'm not driving every day. And especially if I hop in a Car2Go, it's a smart car, electric vehicle. So the stopping and going is not as smooth. And you're also like driving in a new environment. The city is different. There's more cyclists. There's more pedestrians. So you're trying to be conscientious of the people around you. And also kind of herking, jerking all over the place. And just...
You don't know where your blinker is.
Right.
Or how to open the
every
trunk.
Time you're getting into a new car, we're driving a Beamer because apparently that's what we're doing. It was just like the one car that was available.
It was the only zip
by.
Car you could get.
So we like... You know, I pulled up to my apartment and the kid that lives next door was like, oh, nice car. I'm like, it's a zip car. I don't know, man. And so getting into new vehicles every time, it's kind of, you know, I don't know if it's dangerous because I try to pay attention and try to be really conscientious of what's going on. But it's certainly, I mean, if I was watching myself drive a Car2Go, I'm relatively tall and big and like in the car and herking, jerking around. I can imagine if I was a pedestrian, I'd be like, I'm going to walk around the block. I'm good. Yeah. I don't want to walk in front of this guy.
I'm feeling anxious just hearing you describe the process.
There is some anxiety involved. So I just think that the short-term rentals are really cool. If you're trying to kind of live a different sort of lifestyle, just use less, do cars less, whatever. But for us, it frequently is more of a problem than it tends out to be. But we've also spent a lot less money. You know, we're probably spending the equivalent of our car insurance and renting cars all the time.
Sure.
Know?
Yeah. And I suppose that's probably kind of like the transit system. Like you have to figure out how it works and when it's going to work out well for you, when it's not, before you know if it's actually a good idea or not. So some of that is the experimental phase, which you're kind of still in, I think.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I respect that. I'm glad you guys are striking out. And let me say again, especially... Can I say this for people from Florida? That sounds like a terrible thing to say.
You're probably expecting us to like eat someone's face or not know how to use a voting machine or I don't know.
This is going to be on the internet, huh?
Yes, but the hanging chads. And apologies to Johnny K, who I know lives in Florida. We love you and we're not trying to make fun of you. I'm just saying, like, for people making a big life transition, I'm proud of both of you for being willing to experiment because there are a lot of people who that's not even a choice. That's not even a thing they would try. So thank you very much for doing that. That's good stuff.
I guess you're welcome.
Thanks Brock. That was very sweet.
Well, yeah, totally. But
after
it's
I've insulted
like,
your homeland.
Right. I didn't think like, well, Brock would really prefer if I drove less. So let me figure that out.
Believe me, there are days that I don't want to even leave the apartment. So yeah, we're getting there one step at a time.
Right, right.
Adventure.
Well, and let me say, just maybe in way of conclusion, the thing that I found so many times when talking about issues of simplicity and trying to figure out how you can like reduce your footprint on the world and how you can make your own life simpler, it's not a destination. I think it's a
process.
Gradient. It's a process. It's something that we're all doing. So it's not like, have I arrived? It's more like, you know, am I making changes to my life that are doing good to me and to the people around me? And I think you guys are on that path. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it works out for you. But
thanks, dudes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
I know
for
there's
us.
There's tons of more things we could talk about, but we should probably cut it off. We should probably do some mail. So
yeah,
shall we do that?
We got hell of mail. To
we
go
got
through.
Hell of mail.
Good
it's,
mail.
It's true. So here we go.
At least three.
You've
of them.
Got mail.
Logan references Business Insider's article on a novice bicyclist experience with city bike share system in New York City.
Yeah.
Oh, this was This was a hilarious link. Regarding socks. Have y'all tried Darn Tough socks yet?
No, I have
not.
Oh,
no, wait, this is a different subject. Sorry. And
okay.
Also says, thank you. Regarding socks, have you tried Darn Tough socks yet. I was tired of wearing out my smart wool socks, so I tried the Darn Tough socks. Socks are from Vermont, made in the U.S. of merino wool, and carry a lifetime guarantee. What? Really?
Yeah, it says if your socks wear out, they will be replaced for free. I'm interested in this.
Yeah, I've only worn them for 3 months. I'm sure he's meaning different pairs. But I've seen no sign of wear yet.
Constantly.
Although that would be a great like product test. Just wear the same.
Where the smells come in. Yeah.
One man, two socks, 3 months.
Regarding the need for finding friends via an app, there is another iPhone app called Find Friends. With that mutual permission, friends can find each other. Not sure on its battery usage, but I haven't noticed a high drain.
Nice. We'll have to check that out. Yeah, I'm interested in the socks, man. Seriously. And let me just put this plug out while we're here. Merino wool, good stuff. It dries out well. It's a little more expensive, but it... In Portland's weather, it's one of the best things you can wear. So
I've got to figure out a footwear situation because I wear my Cons with socks. I go sans socks.
Talking Converse All Stars.
Converse All Stars. So I wash them every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Something like
not
that.
Not as often as you should.
Not as often as I should. So they get the stinky. Yeah. You know, I know what you're thinking, but I feel like with the high pants and with the low sock situation, I just got to figure out something that's a little more fashionable.
I have some great merino wool socks that my friend got at Costco, actually.
Oh, yeah.
They have been awesome. I got totally soaked at the coast. The tide was coming in, and I just... Anyway.
You're playing in the surf.
Yeah, and my socks had basically dried out by the time that we got back to the car.
There we go.
Goonies never say die.
Damn right.
Perfect.
Derek says, I thought I'd tell you a bit about SwapServe, a new website that we just launched in Portland. It's a place where people can sign up to volunteer with local nonprofits and get free stuff from local businesses as a thank you. We've had a good response so far, and we're hoping to make a solid difference there. Do you think your listeners might be interested in hearing about it?
I think so.
Well, I can't speak for them, really, but you know, we'll put it out there, and let the listeners
I'm interested.
Judge. Oh, well, there we go. I'll let you speak for the listeners.
Listeners, we are interested.
Okay, good.
If so, I'd be down to do an interview. Oh, all right. Share info and do a handstand. Is that a metaphor?
No. He's an actual handstand.
All right.
Yeah, he says he's not sure how the handstand is relevant, but he's willing nonetheless.
All right.
Perfect.
Maybe for the picture in the post. I don't know.
Yeah. So check out swapserve.com.
Yeah, I was checking that out the other day. It's... I'm intrigued.
I
think I would like to use this. And finally, Elisa says...
My favorite email of the week.
I would give this the gold star, the seal of approval. Dear Brock and Aaron, during a recent podcast, you briefly pondered whether or not you had any listeners who are conservatives or Republicans, and if they enjoyed your podcast. To the first question, I want to assure you that you do indeed have at least one.
Hooray.
Is I'm going to pause there. Conservative or Republican?
She kind of just gave a general affirmative, so one could say both. But you're right; those two don't have to be.
It's true. Might be a libertarian.
Inclusive.
Did she answer the second question?
Right. I'm just going to pause there and let it hang for a minute here. To the latter, I would answer that I do very much enjoy your podcast, except when you or your guests occasionally make negative comments about those of us whose worldview varies a bit from your own.
And I'll apologize right now. I'm sorry.
Apologies. Josh.
And I will say that's kind of our nature as humans to kind of poke fun at the outside. Sometimes good-naturedly, most times not always good-naturedly. And I think also part of what makes us human is the ability to apologize for that and be able to connect nonetheless over our differences. So,
right.
Yes, I as well will apologize for the many insults, sometimes jocular, sometimes not so jocular, that I throw at those who are slightly different than me.
Well, it's easy to do. I think it's where it's the easiest comedy to come by. So,
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely. But she does say here... Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just that she's a 48-year-old mother of two, wife, registered nurse, and a grad student, an avid cyclist who commutes from a Portland suburb into downtown Portland twice a week year-round to visit poor, elderly, and disabled clients in their homes and provide coordination of services they receive. On her days off, often found on her road bike, enjoying the sights of the beautiful state, of Oregon. I generally ride over 100 miles each week, she says. So this is definitely someone who is of our ilk, I could say.
Yeah. 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 And I think that's one of the things that is easy for at least me. I can only speak for myself, really. But to kind of like find myself in a niche and go like, well, I'm fairly liberal on issues. I generally don't like to consider myself a liberal,
sure,
so to speak.
Right.
You know, I bike, you know, I do all of these things that sort of would throw me in this kind of leftist liberal niche.
I bet you like that Obamacare.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But where was I going with this? Damn it. I lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
It just goes back to like kind of like putting people outside of me and like kind of going, oh, well, this person, you know, has a viewpoint that it is maybe more conservative than mine. So I couldn't possibly have anything in common with this person.
Right,
and when
right.
it turns out, like, I actually got a shit ton in common with this person.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah.
I would love to ride my bike 100 miles a week. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to, you know, do these badass commutes that she does.
Right.
Frequently, our similarities are more interesting than our differences.
Definitely. Then, yeah. Yeah. I could also respond and just say that, like, I find myself to kind of be apolitical. So if I'm offending the conservatives, I'm probably at least offending liberals in some ways as well.
Yeah.
But
as far as like government goes, I hope to be sort of, yeah, equally offensive to both sides of the aisles.
That's equality right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I may, just because of my worldview, I may take it a little bit easier on those who are a bit left of center, but, as far as government and political process, I don't hold any hope that any one person in any one office is really going to make a huge difference to
right,
me personally.
Right. Yeah, I kind of believe that the system is broken, and I would like to believe that's not the case, but it kind of seems like that is the case. So I guess it's tricky. And politics, of course, this is one of those things. I suppose I should mention, Joshua, you do a podcast called Impolite, which talks about religion and politics and things you're not supposed to talk about at dinner. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this is, if you want more of this, you can go to your site.
AnimpolitePodcast.com?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Just Google it.
Right. I think it's just politics are tricky, and they do often get in the way of people who would otherwise be very good friends. So
yeah.
One thing here that Elisa mentions is that, what is it here? She's writing today to challenge us to get to know some of us. I think you would be very surprised at what you find. And I will say that I actually come from a very conservative background, so my swing to the other side of the political spectrum and then into the middle of not caring is probably kind of a result of being raised kind of in a certain vein of politics.
Sure.
So I would say that I probably do know a bunch of conservatives, and they are some of my favorite people. Like, I've grown up around them.
Some of my best friends are conservatives.
Yeah, that's exactly what that sounds like. But I will say that, yeah, I mean, I come from Republican stock, and I have a bunch of wonderful Democrat friends, and I find myself kind of not caring at the end of the day, because everyone at their heart are people. And I find that even if they don't agree on policy, they agree on people. And that's the thing that's important to me. So I hope that comes through on our show. If not, I'm sorry. We end up being fuck wads, but, you know, there it is. So
I think in the end, truly, we can all just get along.
I hope so. Yeah. We'll reach across the aisle.
Yeah.
Over the libertarians.
So Elisa, thank you
definitely
for writing. Thank you for the honesty.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. And your candor.
I really enjoy that.
Fan.
Totally. Totally. And if there's anything we're hoping to do, I believe simpler living can be bring people closer together. And, you know, when people get close, they find out what they disagree about and what they can kind of get together about. And
also what they smell like.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
what
totally,
we smell like.
Totally. Yeah. And if there's anything that, like, is harder to get over than political differences, it's smell. So let's get people close together. Let's figure that out. All right. Well, this has been a good show. We're at 123 right now, which is a
holy
long podcast.
Shit.
Look at
listeners,
us.
Listeners, if you've made it this long,
we love you all.
We
yeah.
love you.
Well, let's close this thing out. Is there anything else you guys want? I know. Is it internetpodcast.com?
Yeah, I like talking. So if you want to hear more talking, internetpodcast.com. We've got a show about movies and a show about politics and stuff and a show about nerds talking about things.
There we go.
Internet something. Oh, and we do some videos.
Yeah. Well, what's your, it's on YouTube. I don't know, man.
Josh. So that was me attempting to throw to my wife, but you can go to joshplusmelissa.com, and we record a video every other week, every week, whatever, and talk about moving to Portland and being weird and whatever.
Nice. Is that spelled out, Josh plus Melissa?
Correct.
Okay, fantastic. We'll put links to all of those up onto the internet, where we are on the internet. So hey, thank you so much, both of you, for coming in. Really appreciate this.
Thanks, guys.
We have to finish our bombers here and as we go out. So anyways, the end.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Also, any Petalpalooza pictures of us you may have, but not from the naked rack. or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774.
503-847-9774. And you can text...
Oh, yes, you can text that. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And even though we didn't use it yet again, thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
All right, peace, folks. See you later.
Go to bed.
See, I know you know how to work with a mic. You're right up on it.
I do. I like microphones. I like to hear myself. I like singing.
Okay. It's much better. Thank
you. Fantastic. Your ears are fine.
I don't like headphones in general, but these are very comfortable.
The only thing I would say for you is the opposite of most guests. Maybe back off of it just a little bit because you're really hot. So I think that's going to work out okay. It's
big mouth.
Yeah. You're hot.
Aaron said it was a quiet mic. I was just trying to help out.
Hey, Adele. Come on in. We're not started yet. It's okay. This is my wife, Adele. Oh, Adele, would you be able to and turn on the light and close the bathroom door? Would you do all those things for me?
And a banana cognac.
Adele, you're the best person ever.
I end up spending too much time editing, and you know how fiddly that can be.
Yeah, I fiddle a lot.